Okay, our next presenter is Sharona Shakalov. Her title is, Do Water Conservation Measures Help or Hinder Efforts to Reduce a Greenhouse Gas Emission?
Okay. Thank you. Hi, I'm Sharona, doctoral candidate at the UCLA Fielding School of Public Health. I'll be presenting on do water conservation methods or measures help or hinder efforts to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. Findings from a health impact assessment we just completed on California urban water conservation. I have no relationships to disclose. And today I'm going to be talking about California water issues, a little bit of background, then about our health impact assessment, the details, and then looking at our policy options, looking at the water, energy, greenhouse gas emissions, and health nexus. And then finally, our recommendations being recycled water, which is our only option that has a positive impact for water, energy, greenhouse gas emissions, and health. So to start off, California water issues. So we know that California is in a very serious drought right now, but the drought is a little bit more serious than the lack of precipitation. This map right here is looking at average rainfall in California. So we have a major incongruity between the rainfall in the northern part of the state and the rainfall in the southern part of the state. The majority of the rainfall is seen in the cooler colors at the top of the map, and the warmer colors at the bottom show the lack of rainfall in Southern California. This is especially a problem dealing with water distribution because the majority of the state's population resides in the southern part of the state. So we need to get the water from the northern part to the southern part of the state. And distribution is a problem because a lot of the methods to get the water from north to south are deteriorating. One of the methods runs along an earthquake fault line. So if any problems were to occur in that regard, we'd cut off water supply from north to south. But further from that, climate change is a big problem because a lot of the water is stored in snowpack in the northern part of the state. And with the warming temperatures, the water is melting faster than we're able to capture it and use it. And so this is causing problems for our actual water availability. In addition to that, we have a rising population. California's current population is about 37 million, predicted to increase to about 60 million by 2050. So in addition to the water problems we're having right now and the fact that we don't have enough water for our current population, we have to somehow manage the water for our future population. And with all of this, we have a big water crisis and an energy crisis. It takes a lot of energy to move all this water across the state, and with that energy comes a lot of greenhouse gas emissions, which, as we know, is a problem for both climate change and for health impacts. So what's being done about it? In 2009, a big water legislation package was passed by Governor Schwarzenegger, which included Senate Bill 7-7, otherwise known as 20 by 2020, which calls for the reduction of urban recycled water use per water district by the year 2020. So this is a really interesting piece of legislation because it calls for water districts to pick from a mix of conservation methods. There's no mandated method of how to conserve. And so it's adapted to all local conditions. And each water district needs to submit a plan in 2010, 2015, and 2020. And this created a really interesting opportunity for us from the health impact assessment side because we know that these measures can influence health, and we know that the water districts and water suppliers are interested in health, but they may not know or have the tools to understand how their decisions can affect health. So our health impact assessment hopefully gives them the proper tools to do this. So our health impact assessment. For further details on what a health impact assessment actually is, it starts with a policy or project, and in our case, it's the 20 by 2020 California Urban Water Conservation Legislation. And the purpose of the HIA is to create actionable results to affect policy. So this is where the research being done at the university can actually affect the policy-making decisions at the university level, at the policy-making level. So our goal with this is to identify water conservation options that will maximize potential health benefits and minimize potential health harms, with the outcome giving decision-makers actual recommendations for how water conservation decisions can affect health. So from our health impact assessment in total, looking at all the possible conservation measures, we found that California urban water conservation measures can affect health through air quality and air pollution, surface groundwater quality, urban heat islands, recreational opportunities, looking at green space, issues with financial burden, specifically in low-income households, water and wastewater infrastructure costs, and with indoor mold exposure. And we know that greenhouse gas emissions are a health issue. We know that they contribute to climate change, and with that, there are further health impacts, such as increased exposure to extreme heat events, illnesses related to air pollution, food and economic insecurity, changes related to vector and waterborne diseases, and mental health effects. And those water conservation measures that we identified that significantly affect greenhouse gas emissions were dealing with the reliance on imported water. So that's the movement of water from the northern part of the state to the southern part of the state, changes in landscape irrigation, specifically looking at green space issues, and then decisions to implement alternative water sources. So this is something like implementing expanded recycled water use. So when it comes to this nexus between water, energy, greenhouse gas emissions, and health, what are the policy options for decision makers? So we have three options. The first is no action to maintain status quo and to continue on making no changes. The second, looking at overall landscape irrigation bans. And the third would be incentivizing alternative water sources. So maintaining status quo. So just to give scope of the idea and to show a little bit more of current situation in California and the dire situation of these water sources, we have four major aqueduct systems in California. The first one is called the State Water Project, and it's that blue line that runs straight through the middle of the state, otherwise known as the California Aqueduct. And this source is problematic because it provides water to two-thirds of the state, and this is the one that runs along the earthquake fault line. So if any sort of earthquake were to happen along this line, it cuts off water from the northern part to the southern part of the state. It also is relying on snowpack for the water, so there's a lack of water actually feeding into this aqueduct. But also, if too much water is taken from the area, you can see up in the north is San Francisco. If too much fresh water is taken, there's a very big risk of salt water coming from the San Francisco Bay to fill up that porous space taken from fresh potable water, which would contaminate the water source altogether. The next is the Colorado River Aqueduct. In the southern part of the state, it's the line that runs, the blue line that runs against the southern portion. And this water source is especially interesting because our California's allocation of the Colorado River water was taken based on California's 1922 population, and we've increased a little bit since then. So in addition to it being an already over-allocated resource, we aren't getting enough water from that area anyway. And the next is the Los Angeles Aqueduct, which runs through the middle part of the state diagonally from the Owens Valley-Mono Lake area. And this aqueduct is interesting because it's actually gravity-fed, so it doesn't take that much energy to actually get the water from the aqueduct to Southern California. But there's actually a lot of problems with this water source years back because too much water was taken from the area, and it used to be a very thriving region, and now, or in the past, it was totally dried up, and there were a lot of respiratory and dust issues that came from taking too much water from the region. Next is the Central Valley Project, which only brings a smaller amount of water to urban sources. But the next is groundwater. And groundwater is water literally taken from the porous space between the soil. It's not a lake that exists underneath the earth. And it's problematic in California right now because up until about 3 weeks ago, we had no groundwater regulations. And even then, these groundwater regulations aren't being taken into effect until 2020. So it's in effect, no groundwater regulations. But a lot of the sources are contaminated. And there are actually problems within the last few months because of this drought with people taking too much groundwater and only having contaminated resources to rely upon. So this is not a good situation for us in California right now. So what are the health impacts of maintaining the status quo and continuing using these resources as we are today? The health benefits, there are none. The harms, we need to look at the respiratory disease that can come from the increase of greenhouse gas emissions from the energy transport of all this water throughout the state. There's also compromised nutrition. If we don't have enough water, how can we properly water the crops? California supplies a lot of the produce throughout the nation, and this is problematic not only on the California level. Next thing, poor water quality coming from the poor water quality in our groundwater basins, and then financial indicators. If we don't have enough water, the water districts are going to end up increasing their prices, which is going to be problematic for our lower income households. So for decision makers, what are the positives and negatives of choosing this policy option? There are no positives, none at all. We've already started to implement changes. We haven't necessarily seen them all because of the timeline of this legislation, but the negatives is that the energy use is still very high. We still are transporting a lot of water across the state, and with that, the greenhouse gas emissions are still very high. The water needs are still very high. We haven't made many efforts to conserve, and the health impacts are largely negative. So our next policy option is an all-out landscape irrigation ban. This is actually something that was implemented in Australia in response to their severe drought. And it could make a significant impact when it comes to water use throughout the state. In California, 52% of residential water is used for landscape irrigation. That's equivalent to about 7 billion gallons a day. And to stop using all this water would have a significant impact on water conservation efforts because it would lessen the need for that imported water to be transported to homes. But it's also a problem because this green space has a lot of health impacts in addition to helping clean the air through evapotranspiration. And so what are the health impacts if we were to have a ban on landscape irrigation? So the benefits would be a reduction in greenhouse gas emissions coming from the lack of imported water being transported across the state, increased water availability, we wouldn't be using as much water sources, decreased water costs, this would be especially beneficial in low-income households because not as much water would be used, and then decreased runoff. Runoff from the landscape irrigation could be a source of waterborne and vector-borne diseases. But the harms with that would be that the landscape affects urban heat islands, and the lack of this green space would increase the urban heat island effect. It would reduce evapotranspiration, and with that comes greater potential for extreme heat events and heat stroke. But also there's less space to exercise and play, which has a number of health implications. Also, negative impacts for mental health. There have been a lot of studies looking at attention deficit disorder and the benefits of being able to play for those mental health issues, and also negative impacts for elderly health. So what are the positives and negatives for a policymaker? So positives would be looking at energy use, decreased energy use from this decrease in imported water across the state. Decrease in water use, we would lose that 52% from these residential sources. Decreased greenhouse gas emissions, but overall the health impacts are quite harmful. So that'd be something to weigh if you're a decision maker in the water community. So the third policy option would be to expand alternative water sources. I don't have time to go into the scope and the health impacts of all of these, so I'm going to say a little bit about some of them and then go into greater detail for recycled water use. Desalination is the conversion of salt water or seawater to potable water. The next is increased reliance on groundwater. In California, during drought years, 30 to 40% of the potable water is taken from groundwater sources, and increasing that would increase local water use and decrease greenhouse gas emissions, but it's also problematic for reasons I mentioned earlier. And then there's expanded recycled water use, which is the treatment of wastewater to be converted to potable water. So looking at energy intensity by water source, on my right-hand side, we see the imported water and its energy intensity. So the first bar is from the Los Angeles Aqueduct. That's the gravity-fed aqueduct coming from the central part of the state. But the other two are looking at the Colorado River Aqueduct and the State Water Project, which are heavily energy-intensive. But looking at all alternative water sources on the left-hand side of the graph, we see that recycled water is significantly less energy-intensive than, say, desalination, which is the conversion of salt water to potable water. It's 39 times less. So you can imagine the greenhouse gas emissions that are associated with the difference between those two sources. Currently, there's potential for desalination throughout California, but it's not yet being used. This is something that could change in the future with water conservation decisions, but we're trying to promote the recycled water versus desalination currently. So looking at recycled water, the scope of recycled water within California, it's wholly underutilized. This chart shows where recycled water is being used throughout California, and what we're concerned with is urban water uses. And that's the tiny section, it says other, in between golf course irrigation and groundwater recharge. This portion of the pie could be expanded greatly. 51 of 58 counties in California have potential for urban recycled water use, yet the possibilities are very minimal. There are incentives for expanding urban recycled water use within the legislation that we're looking at in this HIA. And further, it's cheaper. It's partially government subsidized, and so it would be a much more ideal option for water users throughout the state. And most importantly, for our purposes in this health impact assessment, it has a much lower energy footprint, therefore decreased greenhouse gas emissions associated with this. So what are the benefits looking at health? First is it's a cost saving for consumers. Second is the reduction in energy footprint. Next is it would have a positive impact for groundwater basins and groundwater basin quality. I mentioned that a lot of groundwater basins in California are heavily contaminated, yet a lot of the groundwater basins are not able to be recharged. So when I say recharge, I mean if the groundwater basin runs dry, it needs to be refilled with more water. Traditionally, this would happen with precipitation, but it could be recharged with recycled water as well. This has positive impact for the groundwater basin because we're recharging the actual basin, but also it could improve the water quality of the basin itself. Further, it has a positive impact for greater park space. Using recycled water to irrigate park space could have positive impacts for green space throughout the region or throughout California, and it would reduce the urban heat island effect. The harms are related to treatment of the water, and if it's improperly treated, the transmission of the diseases that could be associated with that. So what are the positives and negatives? So recycled water, of the options that we've looked at in our health impact assessment, is the only one that has positive effects for all water, greenhouse gas emissions, energy, and health. And the only negatives is for this option would be the potential for the water to carry pathogens. So for our recommendations, overall, we recommend the expansion of recycled water. As I mentioned, it's the only option that we evaluated that had positive impacts for water, energy, greenhouse gas emissions, and health. The only problem is that it's not implemented very widely, and so we hope that this HIA and other efforts would help to promote and expand recycled water use throughout California. I'd like to acknowledge the project manager and lead author, Brian Cole, and also our PIs, Dr. Jonathan Fielding and Richard Jackson. Also, I'd like to thank the fact that our research was supported by a grant by the Health Impact Project and Robert Wood Johnson and Pew Charitable Trusts. Our technical advisory board was very instrumental in helping us put together the full report. There are water experts and health experts from across the state of California. And for more information, which includes the full report, executive summaries, and a case study of the Burbank Water District, you can find this website. And that's it. Thank you.